Struggling with your faith? You're not the only one. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Hey, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We are streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're also live at joyradio.ca across the GTA on AM 1250. This is our last Camino Guru guest, and his name is Robert Ward. He is the author of All the Good Pilgrims, Tales of the Camino de Santiago. By the way, I want to let everyone know this is also one of my favorite songs. We were doing that earlier in the show. Tim and I were playing favorite tunes of ours. And, of course, this is both of ours, one of our favorite artists,
yes,
Sting.
Sure.
And this is a song called Dead Man's Rope.
Number three on your list.
Number three on my list. On what list?
Gotta Gets.
Oh, yeah. So how does it go again? James Taylor,
Bono,
then Sting.
Yeah.
It used to be Charles Manson that I wanted to interview, but
really?
He's not
there
anymore.
Yeah.
He never really was there, but it was interesting at least. How do I segue from Charles Manson to Robert Ward? Robert, thanks for joining us. I'm so sorry to have to mention Charles Manson before you. That's kind of weird, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I think I'm I'd like to think I'm a good second best to Charles Manson.
I hope so. I hope so.
Way more interesting than Bono, I hope.
Yeah, no question. Well, from his first journey along the Camino de Santiago, Robert Ward fell in love with the landscape, history, art, romance of this old pilgrimage path, and above all, he fell in love with the people of the Camino, both the welcoming Spaniards and the steadfast pilgrims who come from all over the world to discover what it means to travel 500 miles, almost 800 kilometers, one step at a time. In All the Good Pilgrims, Ward returns for a fifth trip along the Camino, sharing the way with a Canterbury Tales cast of characters. First of all, can we just, I mean, I want to list these characters, and my first question is, really? Really?
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay, so a wizard from Brazil.
There used to be a lot more of those than there are now. There was a huge influx of Brazilians on the Camino in the late 80s and early 90s, and they were all inspired by Paulo Coelho's book, of course, the Pilgrimage, about his walk on a very sort of fanciful Camino that never existed. But yeah, you met a lot of Brazilians who were kind of walking along with his book in their hands, doing his spiritual exercises, and Roberto was one of them.
Roberto.
Yeah, my Brazilian counterpart.
Are you still in touch with the wizard?
I'm in touch with very few people who I met on the Camino, sadly, because one meets them and one has very intense, brief, you know, get to know each other very well. And, you know, they go back to their lives and you go back to yours is how it usually works.
Yeah, yeah. Bavarian Buddha.
That was Carl.
Carl!
Something about Carl?
Yeah. Carl, the Bavarian Buddha. What about him,
Carl,
man?
He was a big, burly guy with a very generous beard. He was a school teacher. But he just walked out his front door in his little town village in Bavaria one day. And when I met him halfway along my Camino, he was 3.5 months into his. And his intention was to get to Santiago. This is the second time he was doing it. He said, you know, you have to do it a second time because the first time you're not enjoying it. And he was going to go to the Atlantic, and then he was going to walk home. And so I met him in July, and he figured he'd be home sometime in November.
A repentant French legionnaire. Did he do bad stuff? Did he kill people?
He was fascinating. Yes, he hinted to me. He didn't go into detail, but he was talking about, I think the closest he got was talking about doing bayonet practice and how it felt different when it was a real body from when you were doing the practice. But he had been involved in just about every dirty operation that the French Legion had been involved in during the last 30 years or so. This is what he told me anyway. And the deal with the French Legion is that when you leave, they create a new identity for you and a whole resume and a life that you've never lived. But he said that, you know, if somebody calls a number on your resume, then there's someone in an office somewhere who says, oh, yes, Francois, he was one of our best employees. We recommend him highly. But his hope was to, after he completed the Camino, he was going to go back to Avignon, and he wanted to start a foundation to help people like him who were leaving the French Legion after doing some horrible things and probably being traumatized and who needed some spiritual guidance and assistance to get back into into the real world.
Man, so many interesting characters. I want to keep going. This is fascinating. A hard-drinking Quixote in a wheelchair.
Oh, dear. I'm not sure he was just drinking. I think he was doing a little cocaine, too. He was kind of a fascinating character because he was in this very rickety wheelchair, so he needed somebody to push him a lot of the time, and so he had enlisted a distant cousin, and so the two of them were kind of partying their way along the Camino, and they had drawn in, they had their own little circle of people who he was the center of.
Wow.
They had wonderful sing-alongs in the evenings at the albergues.
Our Lady of the Bundle Buggy.
She was a woman from Argentina who was probably in her 70s, and she couldn't carry, you know, something heavy on her back. She wasn't strong enough to do that anymore, and so she had a little shopping cart with all of her stuff in it that she just dragged around with her everywhere. And occasionally people would, you know, everyone wanted to try to help her, but she would dissuade you as much as she could. She wanted to do it on her own, and it meant that she had to walk along the highways instead of taking the paths often. But she was just the sweetest thing. And one night in one of the albergues, someone asked, you know, why are you doing this? And she just smiled and said, amor. You know, she was just doing this for love, whatever that meant to her.
Amor. Amor.
And she had also, she had been to Jerusalem. She had been to... Oh, I don't remember where else, but, you know, she'd been to a lot of places with her bundle buggy.
Spice Pilgrims and Templars.
The Spice Pilgrims were a couple of girls from London, mid-20s.
Did they tell you what they want, what they really, really want?
I think they
Come
were
on, Tim, that was
there
hilarious.
For a good time.
Okay. Yeah. So what were they all about? What, they were just there to kind of hang out and chill and have a good time?
Mostly, yeah. They were a little on the kind of Wiccan side of things. So they were into coincidences and spooky places and the supernatural side of the Camino.
Right.
But in a casual way.
All right. And of course, finally, we've got to talk about St. James himself.
Ah, yeah.
The sturdy Dutchman.
Oh, okay, that version of St. James.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't got my my book sleeve here, so I was thinking, which St. James would this be of the many I met? Well, the legend, one of the many legends of St. James, is St. James the Pilgrim. So St. James is actually there, and he's walking on the path with you, and he will manifest himself sometimes when he's needed. You know, he just appears. So the second time I did the Camino, I did when I went through the Pyrenees, I sort of took the highway route, and there's little villages along the way, so there's always something to eat and somewhere to sit down. The second time I went over the mountains, which isn't as horrible as it sounds, you know, they top out at about 700 meters, so, you know,
it's
a good morning's walk, basically.
Yeah.
But I set out without any food, assuming because there were little dots on my map that looked like villages, and from my previous experience, I thought, oh, there'll be somewhere to eat along the way. There wasn't. At least there wasn't in, you know, October when I was walking. And I got right to the top, and there was supposed to be a well there, so at least I was going to get some water halfway through the day, and the well had been turned off for the winter. So I just sat down at this point. I'd been walking for 6 hours, and I was very hungry, and I was desperately thirsty, and I was just feeling kind of miserable and sorry for myself. And out of nowhere appears this stocky Dutch pilgrim. And he stops and he talks to me for a minute. And I mention that I haven't had anything to eat. And he says, oh, dear. And he digs into his bag and starts pulling out all of this food and giving it to me. So I figured that was St. James, who stopped by to help me out that time.
Oh, man. Okay, so hold on. As an agnostic, you know, what do you do with those kind of weird, trippy experiences?
Well, actually, I'll qualify the agnostic label. I mean, as far as belief goes, I would call myself an atheist. You know, I don't believe that there is a God. I'll call myself an agnostic, though, because I don't know one way or the other. All right, so I'll take either one of those labels. Labels, descriptions.
Yeah, sure.
I think, well, so sometimes I look at those coincidences or weird accidents, and yeah, you have to wonder, like, was that really an accident? Was that just a coincidence? But the other times I think, you know, we live very routine lives, most of us. We go to the same places, we see the same people day after day after day, and so untoward things, weird coincidences, don't happen very often because we're always in the same... When you take yourself right out of there and put yourself in a place where you're meeting different people and different things are happening every day, then a lot more things happen. And maybe that's just, you know, accidents maybe happen more often when you throw yourself in the way of vehicles. I don't know.
So you never had a Road to Damascus experience. You never had some kind of, I'm going to put a sound effect on this, experience when you're out in the Camino.
Nothing life-changing, no. I had things where in that moment I thought, wow, this is, you know, this is powerful, this is interesting, this is a moment I'm going to remember. But there wasn't anything that convinced me that, yeah.
I have the spiritual gift of pessimism. and when I went to Jerusalem for a month, people said, oh, you're going to get to experience with God that you've wanted, and it's going to happen, and blah, blah, blah. And it didn't happen. There was a film crew waiting for it to happen, but it didn't happen. So I should have faked it, but it didn't. I couldn't do that either. And
you know,
so
it becomes that much less likely to happen when there's a film crew.
Yeah, you have no idea. You have no idea. That's so well said. So, you know, this then kind of gets my brain into thinking, well, you know, people have said, well, you have to be in the right mindset. You have to be open. You have to be willing. You have to be, you know, able to receive kind of cool supernatural things. And if you're closed off and your arms are crossed, you're not going to get nothing. Would you be willing or open to any kind of weird supernatural thing happening?
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Right.
But it would have to be pretty convincing. For me not to look at it and say, well, you know, maybe that was something that was supernatural or ordained, or maybe that was just an accident. But even if it was just an accident, it's an accident that opened my eyes and made me think a little about my life and what I'm doing here.
What's with all the God stuff then? As somebody who has declared that there is no God, you seem to be into a lot of God stuff, like the Virgin Mary, for example.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you're fascinated by things because they're different from your own experience. And that's about as the best I can make of it. I mean, there's a line in my first book, I said that I've always been sort of pressing my window up against pressing my nose up against the window.
Yeah, well, I've been doing the opposite. I've been pressing my window up against some nose somewhere. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just being on the outside, looking in and sort of being fascinated and wondering, you know, what are those people on the other side, what are they experiencing? And sometimes, you know, and wishing, too. You know, because sometimes I see people who seem to be getting great comfort, or more than comfort, you know, assurance from religion. And I think, boy, wouldn't it be great to have that? But, yeah, I mean, it's not something that you just go out and acquire somewhere.
Hmm. And you grew up with it or no?
My father was was a communist and an atheist, and you know, he'd been brought up in a very religious way, and so he really turned his back on God. So it was,
maybe that'll happen to you the opposite way, because you grew up with a communist atheist father. Maybe you're, next thing you know, you're going to be like Billy Graham Jr. soon.
Absolutely possible. I'm waiting.
Robert Ward is a writer and traveler with a special interest in pilgrimages. Why? I mean, and what's been the most interesting pilgrimage for you so far?
Well, the Camino. I mean, the Camino is something that I've got to the stage now where if I've got a couple of weeks at my disposal and I want to have a relaxing holiday, I go to the Camino. It's a wonderful mix of getting out and being on your own and having time to think and reflect and just be in nature and be in movement and meeting people. My own preference is to sort of meet people in the evening and be on my own in the daytime, have that time to myself, and then in the evening you get to somewhere where there's a group of people and they want to talk, and they don't just want to talk, make small talk usually. They want to get into things, and so it's always a fascinating experience.
Do you find that while out on the Camino, you get into the yes, there is a God, no, there isn't a God talk? In other words, do you let people know that you're an atheist when you're out on the Camino? Hi.
Sometimes.
Hi, my name's Robert, and I'm an atheist.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes up, I'm not shy about saying that's what I. I mean, I stayed for a month in Lourdes, and I was active there. I was involved in helping with the processions and moving the invalids around and so on. And I think a lot of people there accepted that I was, assumed that I was Catholic, because everybody is. But a few people, they asked because they noticed I wasn't crossing myself when we went to Mass or things like that. And mm-hmm. I told them, and nobody was upset about it. They all thought it was kind of fascinating.
What's the name of the Mary book?
Virgin Trails.
I like it. I like it.
Happy Virgin Trails.
Really? To you? There's a guy named Dr. Daniel Taylor who's written a lot about pilgrimage stuff and different travels around the way. And he wrote a book called The Myth of Certainty. Have you ever heard of that?
No. That's a nice title.
Oh, I'd highly recommend it. He sounds like, you guys sound like two kindred spirits.
Oh, yeah?
Although he's a believer, aside from that point. Mm-hmm. But I love this take on things that you have, Robert, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. And, of course, to have someone who's not really sure about the other side of life,
mm-hmm.
You know, I resonate a lot with that. And yet at the same time, and I'm glad you said this, at the same time, you know, I need to make sure I remain arms wide open on this experience as opposed to crossing my arms and saying, nah, 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 boo-boo.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
By the way, who says na-na-na boo-boo?
I don't know. Who was that?
Agnostics do.
Agnostics say that,
right? The Shirelles?
The Shirelles. Yeah. So remaining open to any, the possibilities of anything is a good...
Yeah. I think that there has to be, I mean, the balance, without going too far into skepticism, and, you know, when you talk about your experience in Jerusalem, I think, you know, you were there for a month. 40 days, did you say?
Yeah, I was there for a month. Yep.
You know, that's not very long. If you're thinking about a lifetime, 1 month is a drop in the bucket of a lifetime.
Right.
And I think for people to really undergo a serious change and become a different person or find something, you know, it normally takes longer than that. And it's also very difficult to go and have an experience like the Camino and then come home and be different because things haven't changed here.
Yeah.
And everything back here is going to be set to making you who you were before you went. So I worry about people who go to the Camino with the expectation that their life is going to be changed and they're going to come home transformed and transfigured. It doesn't happen very often. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's not something that people should go expecting.
Yeah.
But the other thing, with the wonderful thing about the Camino, my favorite thing in a lot of ways, is that it's a very ironic experience, and whatever it is that you expect or hope for, it will frustrate all of your expectations, and that's really what you learn from more than anything. Like, I would never wish someone to go and have the Camino that they want. They'll learn a lot more by having the Camino that they
don't
want.
Yeah, they didn't expect. Yeah, well said. Well said. Well, okay, listen, I appreciate your time, Robert. And folks, again, the book is called All the Good Pilgrims, Tales of the Camino de Santiago. His website is robertward.ca. Send him a note, ask him questions. I'm sure you'd be okay with that. True?
My website's currently under reconstruction, but yes,
okay.
True.
There you go.
They might not get their answers for a couple of weeks until things have totally patched up.
Robert, thank you for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And look, have a wonderful time. When are you setting out?
October 1st.
It'll still be busy at the beginning of that time, so.
Okay. Well, then I'll have lots of people not to talk to.
Okay. Have a great Camino. Buen Camino.
Thank you, Robert. Take care. Bye-bye. Robert Ward on the Drew Marshall Show.